the permit to issue penalties for parking, as this one does. What we've brought before you today came out of our exploration of some of the issues that come up with these private parking facilities when we worked with Commissioner Fish's office on this particular complaint. Pay and park facilities who issue these penalties are currently regulated by City Code Chapter 7.25, which is the proposed, the ordinance before you today has some proposed amendments to that chapter. The regulations in that chapter provide important consumer protections by describing the notification and signage requirements in order to issue penalties for parking. They provide a company complaint process and a city staffed appeal process. And it also indexes the maximum penalty amount to the city parking tickets so that there isn't excessive penalties charged beyond what would be in concurrence with city parking tickets. As we administer this program, certain lot configurations or locations require special conditions or restrictions in order to avoid confusion. Sometimes the shape of a lot means that you have to put extra signs in place. Sometimes if there are two lots together, you have to make sure that if somebody buys a ticket for one, they don't get a penalty if they happen to park just across the way in the wrong lot. So that's an ongoing process that Ann administers very well. She inspects these lots and tries to determine in advance if there's going to be some confusion on the part of the consumer about what's required and what the possible penalty is if they don't do it. In the case of the lot down on Southwest Hall and Moody, we had put in some additional signage requirements because of the strange configuration of this particular private facility, but as Commissioner Fish noted, it was very difficult to read some of those signs at night because there isn't the same kind of lighting down there that there is in some other parts of the city.
I can just add, Kathleen, my colleagues know that I don't have the world's greatest eyesight, and when you're looking for a parking spot at night and you're driving along the street, what's important is to be able to see a sign. And one of the signs was placed in such a way that if you were entering the configuration from a particular direction, you wouldn't see the sign. So that's not entirely helpful. And a number of the signs were not illuminated. So when it's dark and you think you're still on the public right-of-way, it doesn't occur to you now that you've necessarily gone into a different area, private parking. And the area of confusion that I've noticed the most is that people that are familiar with our parking rules adjacent to that area, which typically allow you to park free after 7 in the evening, are operating under the same assumption when they come to this place. And even the meters, the machine that you feed, looks like a first cousin of what we use. So what we want to do is make sure that we're not creating unnecessary barriers and problems for people who are otherwise doing what we encourage them to do, which is to come downtown, spend money, enjoy our great city. We don't want them caught in some kind of net where they're unaware that there's a different set of rules. And I applaud you for working with the operator to get some common sense changes. And even things like just illuminating signs make sure that in the evening, people like me understand what the rules are.
So after we solved some of the problems that we saw at this particular lot, we met with Commissioner Fish's staff and Deputy City Attorney Full Love, and we just took a look at the chapter to determine whether there might be a few things that could be added to make it clear to the operators and also to the citizens what was required. One of the things that had come up when we first met about the issue was that we didn't really have data about how many tickets were being issued at individual lots. We had the ability to ask for it, but we didn't get regular reports on that. As a part of the public comment process with the companies we regulate, they requested that we don't require ongoing reports that are very large and cumbersome, but we did come up with a good solution that they felt was very practical that will allow us to get more data as time goes on about how many tickets are issued at particular lots. And that will help us key in quickly to whether or not there might be a problem at a particular lot. We also made sure to add some additional requirements about the availability of the operator locally for complaints Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Someone should be here locally to respond to citizen problems. And we also clarified some of the time requirements. If we get a complaint, how quickly the company has to respond back to us. One of the areas of language that we put in was we explicitly stated that we can add additional requirements, signage, lighting, perhaps restriction of hours, based upon problems at the lot. I just want to stress that this is something that we have consulted with the city attorney's office about, and it is something that we have the authority to do now. We do it routinely, but we thought it was very important to clarify in the code language itself that that is a part of the process. And we're happy to answer any questions.
Questions from council? Does anybody want to testify on this?
Yes, we have three people signed up. Mark Hoffhines, Corinne Selko, and Crystal Ilinski.
Welcome. Please give your name, and you have 3 minutes. One of you. It doesn't matter which.
No.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Hales, City Commissioners. My name is Corinne Selko. I'm with the law firm of Perkins Coie. I'm here on behalf of City Center Parking, an operator of over 33,000 pay-and-park parking spaces in the city of Portland. First, I'd like to thank the Mayor's Office and Commissioner Fish's Office and the Revenue Bureau for their gracious assistance in shepherding us through this proposed code amendment process, as well as for allowing us the opportunity to collaborate on these amendments and to offer our suggestions and feedback. We were able to agree on most of the amendments to the code in this area, but we do have one issue that remains of concern, which will be the subject of my testimony today. I apologize that my colleague Dana Kravchuk, who collaborated with the Revenue Bureau, as well as other team members from City Center Parking, were unable to be here today. They had planned on attending when this hearing was set for last week, but due to the schedule change, had conflicts and were unable to be here.
Before you begin, let me just say we all got a copy of the September 10th letter from Dana outlining the concerns, so thank you for getting that to us before the hearing.
Great, thank you. Thank you for letting me know. I'll go ahead and just briefly summarize those concerns, and I'll try to answer any questions that you may have. As Ms. Butler already pointed out, Chapter 7.25 of the Portland City Code regulates pay-and-park parking facilities, and that chapter does contain detailed requirements for signage, lighting, and lot configuration for the purpose of fairness and protecting the parking public. The at issue today is the provision that Ms. Butler mentioned, which significantly expands the authority of the Revenue Bureau director to exercise broad discretion in requiring modifications to existing facilities. At the outset, let me just note that we think the system's currently been working well. To our knowledge, there's been no dispute about the city's ability to regulate park and pay facilities or to offer requests for improvements to such facilities when there's a need to avoid confusion for the public. In other words, currently, we're aware of no occasion in which the city has made requests for improvements that have been rebuffed by any of the parking lot operators. To the contrary, we've had circumstances where city requests for improvements have been honored. There's been the case, I think Ms. Butler alluded to it, where there were two lots that were adjacent and there was confusion about which parking station to pay at. And City Center Parking installed a fence or a hedge to better identify and separate the lots. And there's the occasion that Commissioner Fish had mentioned where in the South Waterfront, City Center Parking went ahead and added additional signage and lighting. So
I'll give you an additional minute, but if you could get to the crux
concerns,
of the issue.
Sure. Our four basic concerns relate to the broad discretion. The first is that the directors provided unlimited discretion to require any changes. And we believe that some nexus, it would be helpful to have some nexus involved to explain why these changes would be necessary. So we've included language as a proposal to show that any requests made by the director should be reasonably related to the harm that's to be mitigated. The second concern we have is with the ability of the director to require a change that would reduce the number of existing parking spaces. Parking lot operators have financial performance expectations that are dependent on retaining the number of existing spaces in their lots. The third concern is also related to making sound business decisions by the lot operators on the front end, which is that the director may restrict the hours during which penalties may be assessed. Again, that goes directly to financial performance expectations of those lots. Lastly, our concern is that the discretion of the director is also not limited by previously approved land use approvals, such as for Central City Parking Review or Design Review, which may have conditions of approval attached to those land use approvals, as well as other code provisions like in the sign code that may conflict. And so we've prepared language in that letter dated September 10th that would make sure that any request by the director does not conflict with those land use approvals or other portions of the code.
Madam President, if I could just...
Well, actually, I haven't received a copy of that letter. So since this would be moving to second reading, if I could suggest that we deal with some of these issues
in the interim. They emailed each of the office with this, and we took it off an email. Everyone was copied, but we'll make sure everyone gets a copy.
Thank you.
What I would like to... And first of all, thank you for your testimony, and thank you for the letter. Just three brief comments. One is the concern that's been raised about whether the Revenue Bureau will somehow exercise its discretion in a way that shows a disregard for the concerns of the operator or business practices, I think is belied a little bit by the way we work collaboratively to get to these changes. We listened very carefully to operators and concerns they had. We actually modified our proposal quite a bit in response to feedback. So I would say that to your client that it is something of an insurance policy that the way we've conducted this process I think is consistent with the way the Revenue Bureau acts. Second thing is I believe we have a good faith disagreement about whether in the current code the Revenue Bureau already has this authority, but it is the city attorney's view that to the extent we already have the authority, there's no harm in being explicit about that authority, so everyone is placed on notice. And that I think is the better way of drafting code language so that we're very clear. But the third thing I just wanted to note, since you mentioned hours of operation, in fact, when I began this process, my first impulse, and I guess it was an uninformed impulse, maybe just a common sense view, was that since people were getting ticketed for parking past 7 o'clock, and since it was an area where most of the parking was free after 7, my initial impulse was, well, can we put into law a requirement that you don't get charged after 7? And I got one of those good news, bad news answers. The first was we could probably do that. And the second was, but it would allow the operators, in lieu of ticketing and fining, to tow your car, because after all, it's on private property. And the reason we have this statutory scheme is to give private property owners a regime in lieu of towing to enforce rules. And it seemed to me to be counterproductive to regulate hours at this point if the default was that the operator could just tow a car rather than issuing a ticket. And I think in terms of headaches for people downtown, having your car towed is greatly outweighs getting a ticket. And I was also, frankly, guided by the fact that the feedback we got from operators was that they would, if a customer complained that there was some that they incurred the ticket because of confusion or they weren't aware of the ground rules, that the operators were willing to waive the fine under a case-by-case analysis. So in that spirit of collaboration, I'm comfortable with these rules because I think they have been enforced reasonably by the Revenue Bureau. But I appreciate you putting your concerns on the record because I have a hunch that if you at some future date believe that they've been enforced in some way that's heavy-handed or arbitrary, the council will be reminded of your testimony today. So I appreciate it.
Thank you for that explanation. I know there may be some more comments. I'm going to continue passing the gavel down the row here because I have to leave. And so I'll appreciate the conversation when we get there. next week.
Who gets it next, Steve, when you leave?
Good question. I don't know.
I think it actually ends the hearing, so we'll speed this up.
So I just want to clarify, Commissioner Fish, when you said you're comfortable with the changes, are you talking about the changes suggested by City Center Parking or the changes that we're making?
Both. So we've compromised on the language and the code changes based on the feedback we got from the operators. And I also believe they've made a good faith effort to address the problems at this location, which I'm comfortable with now. And we'll be getting data over the next 6 months to see whether there are any unusual spikes in tickets that may suggest that there's further work we could do in consultation with the operator to make sure people clearly understand what the rules are.
And the position of our city attorney is we already have the authority, if we so choose, to regulate hours of operation of these private lots. But then the downside could be if we regulate the hours of operation, the owners could tow rather than
correct. And we're reluctant to do that, Dan, and for many of the reasons that the witness has testified to. We don't want to get that deep now into someone's business, but we do want to make sure that people are not inadvertently tripping a wire here and getting tickets, because it does sour their experience coming downtown. We want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to put them on notice that they are in a unique situation governed by a different set of rules.
And my only other question, and maybe it's to you or Kathleen, but how would any of this result in a loss of parking spaces?
Precisely because there's no boundary, there's no standard by which the director may require any changes. So, for example, if the change required is a 5-foot in width hedge with a 5-foot setback from any parking space, that would eat into the existing parking spaces currently allowed at the lot.
So that would be in the case of dividing a confusing lot for customers?
Sure.
Sort of the example you mentioned where City Center did put in a hedge to make clear that there's two separate parking lots? Is that what
I'm saying? Just throwing out an example. I mean, in that specific actual example, City Center did put in a hedge, and to my knowledge, there was no specific, you know, width of the hedge required or setback required from any parking space. But in the hypothetical, if the director's allowed unlimited discretion to say, for whatever reason, we want a 10-foot setback from any fence or hedge between that and the parking space, it could start to eat into existing parking spaces, which parking lot operators have relied upon in the initial look. I mean, part of this is based on the fact that the city gets to inspect the facility at the front end before it even becomes operational to make sure that it complies with city standards. And so at that time, those elements of the lot are relied upon by the operators in making their business decisions.
It did not, to answer your question, arise in the Southwest Moody situation. So these are not problems that we addressed there and that for which we requested a remedy. But I believe the spirit of the testimony is to make sure that any of these rules are enforced in a collaborative way, which is precisely how we drafted these code changes, by working with the operators.
Okay.
Was there Mark or something coming? Another person? Okay. Yeah. I'd actually like to catch you ladies on your way out about the 9-to-5 input line on this topic. Weren't you talking about there's a way to bring complaints?
Crystal, could you address your testimony to us?
Yes. Well, I'm really glad, actually, Commissioner Fish, that you're comfortable with the collaboration. I guess that doesn't really make me confident. But also what you had said about the need to avoid confusion to the public, definitely. I've been following this with intrigue in the media, these topics, and so I do have a lot of questions, and I will pursue that route with the Revenue Bureau, is that right? All right. So my name is Crystal Elinsky, and I represent 10,000 concerned citizens. Specifically with this area, there are other special areas, and I think it's good to consider what's really working when it comes to parking, and lighting and signage to me always seem like a second thing that people look at. When you're driving by, you don't see signage. And lighting, let's just say it's a waste. I mean, we're lighting this room and we don't need to. But I would suggest actually painting the area. Ever since they put those outlines for parking, I tend to follow that, and I think it would be really neat if we could use symbols that would refer people and make them realize this is special parking. Read the signage, you know? So that's one way. Also, to go out on a larger scale, I just wonder why the city doesn't make money on parking. It would be such a groovy deal. Going back to my car-free comment earlier, if we could really, you know, help to make the city more livable, have fewer cars, but when the money comes in, the revenues, that we have very good contracts, and it seems like the contracts aren't too good. I've heard recently, I think it's City Center Parking that has been laying people off for putting machines in their place. So I'd like to find out more about that. It sounds like there really hasn't been much decision, and I'm glad there will be a second reading. I will do some more research before then. And another comment is that the ticket, basically when you purchase a parking ticket, a lot of that money is going to a holding or a hedge fund or something that goes to the Canadian teachers' retirement fund. And I just think that's bizarre. As a teacher, I'd really like it if we could fund our own city, if that money would go to us. Another comment is the handicap parking. I read about that a lot. And I think it's funny that we're concentrating on people that get the right, I suppose, to park all day and how much time and precious time and precious space it takes. But what about all the cop cars out there? They're all over the inner city here. They've got the most precious parking spots around. So why do they get that? Don't they have parking galore? These are things to consider, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Is there anyone else, Carla?
No, he has left.
Mayor, this goes to a second reading. Can I just say, though, at this stage that Thomas Lanham, Kathleen Butler, Ann Holm, I really just want to single out their creative work here. This we might have bit off a little more than we intended when this first came up, but it was in response to a concern that we had heard secondhand, and then I personally experienced, and then we knew that we understood that there's been some watchdog journalism around it. And the area is highly complicated. People have very strong views on both sides, but Mayor, the OMF team did a very, I think, an outstanding job engaging people and balancing a number of interests, and it resulted in this work product. And it's a pleasure to work with solution-oriented people. And I hope that the council is comfortable with this. This goes to a second reading. I'll make sure that everyone has a copy of the concerns that were raised by one of the operators, which I believe everyone's emailed, but I'll make sure we have it. And if people have additional concerns and comments between now and Thursday, we would welcome them, and we hope to bring this back for a vote next week.
Great. Thank you very much. Good work. Passes to second reading. And one more item, 891.
Assess property for sidewalk repair by the Bureau of Maintenance.
Second reading and roll call.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And we are recessed until this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Sorry I wasn't able to be here to vote on that package. That's a really good package.
I think people did it.